It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Well, some changes may be on the horizon for how sexual misconduct is handled on college campuses. This is according to a recent New York Times article. Education Secretary Betsy DeVos preparing some new policies on campus sexual misconduct that would do a number of things. Bolster the rights of students accused of assault, harassment, or rape. Reduce liability for institutions of higher education, and encourage schools to provide more support for victims. The proposed rules also narrow the definition of sexual harassment, hold schools accountable only for formal complaints filed through proper authorities and for conduct said to have occurred on their campuses, and would also establish a higher legal standard to determine whether schools improperly addressed complaints. Now, the Trump administration's new rules will have the force of law and can go into force without an act of Congress after a public comment period. Let's understand this, try to anyway, discuss it, these possible changes with Des Moines attorney Roxanne Conlon, also former assistant attorney general for Iowa in the 1970s, where she was head of the Iowa Civil Rights Section and fought race and sex discrimination. Roxanne Conlon, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much.
I ran through a whole laundry list of things there. Can you tell us, broadly speaking, for those unacquainted with this, how would you characterize the possible changes compared to what we've had in the past?
The intent of the changes appears very transparent to me. That is, in fact, to narrow everything about the definition of sexual harassment, the way you prove sexual harassment, what the remedies for sexual harassment are, and how you can hold a university liable for sexual harassment. That's clearly its intent, and that is that's going backwards, as has much of the Trump administration, frankly.
Mm-hmm. Expand on that. What do you mean by going backwards? Where was were previous administrations at? Most prominently, I guess you would say, the Obama administration, right?
Yes, the Obama administration had rules in place, which, of course, Trump eliminated, which tried to be helpful to the survivors of sexual harassment and sexual assault on campus or near campus and on some premises that were owned by or run by a university. As I understand these new rules, that will no longer be possible. But perhaps the most important is what appears to be the unwillingness of the Trump administration to take action to protect the victims of sexual harassment. Their main concern is to protect a person accused of sexual assault or sexual harassment, and to protect the protect the university from liability. That's not my main focus. One of the things I hope your listeners realize is they can do anything they want to do on the federal level, and Lord knows they have. In Iowa, no change in the law has occurred. In other words, it is still illegal and will remain illegal for sexual harassment to occur on campus and or nearby in places owned by or managed by campus, and nothing about that's going to change.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so to be clear here, this is policy from the federal government,
exactly.
A change of administration, a change of policy in this direction. So what you're saying is that colleges and universities in Iowa don't have to follow it at all? There are no consequences?
Oh, no, they have to follow the law for wherever it is. But the Iowa law, which is much broader than these new rules. Nothing about these new rules requires, quote, following. These new rules are an attempt, in my opinion, to make it easier for people who commit sexual assault to get away with it. That's what I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's wrong, and certainly it is not the law of Iowa. If you want to enforce Iowa law, you have to go to an Iowa district court. So that is mostly where I've been for the last several years, as a matter of fact.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's why it wouldn't affect any places in Iowa, because Iowa has a more stringent. Is stringent the right word? I'm not sure.
Stringent is that's exactly the right word, Ben.
Okay, so because we have a more stringent law here in Iowa, these federal changes, should they occur, will not affect any colleges and universities in the state.
Well, they won't forgive colleges and universities if they don't do the right thing by the victims. And one of the right things is to assist women and men who are victims of sexual assault and sexual harassment to report it to the proper authorities, particularly if it's an assault that is a crime. And that's been one of our complaints all along. Mostly universities want to keep the public from knowing about any assault that occurs on campus, and the only way to do that is not report it to the police. Mm-hmm. So people who are victims are generally not even told about that remedy, and that drives those of us who work in this area absolutely nuts.
And the motivation for higher ed, for colleges and universities, not to want that reported, is it simply a matter of PR?
Yeah, don't you think? I think that colleges and universities, which now or may remain, maybe they still will have to report the number of assaults, and that they just don't want to do that. They don't want anybody to know. It's a secret. That's what I think.
Mm-hmm. I want to go back to what you said earlier and the what seems to be the chief grievance of the Secretary of Education, Betsy DeVos, in coming up with these new policies. Last fall, I want to read a quote from her from last fall when she attacked the Obama guidelines as federal overreach that coerced schools into setting up sort of quasi-judicial systems. Here's the DeVos quote from September of 2017. The truth is that the system established by the prior administration has failed too many students, survivors, victims of a lack of due process, and campus administrators have all told me that the current approach does a disservice to everyone involved. React to that.
Well, I recognize that someone who has never gone to a public school might have that view, but we think that the Obama regulations, which had problems, let me assure you, there were problems with respect to it, but at least they were trying, and I think she's trying not to.
Mm-hmm. Did the Obama rules, though, to the point, expect too much of colleges and universities to in fact set up quasi-judicial systems that were inconsistent, that were not set up to perform that task?
Well, I would say the Obama rules did too little. Of course, Betsy DeVos's rules do nothing, so the Obama rules were better for everyone concerned with this process.
Mm-hmm. How is sexual harassment defined differently as you understand these coming policies?
Yes, I have to tell you, I just don't know exactly how they will define it. There's a paragraph in there that purports to define sexual harassment, but it is so. To me at least, sexual harassment is sexual harassment.
Okay, here's the quote I think we're looking for you to comment on.
Okay.
Unwelcome conduct on the basis of sex that is so severe, pervasive, and objectively offensive that it denies a person access to the school's education program or activity. I think that's it.
Yes. That let me explain to you that is not the law. And it's never going to be the law, I don't think. That says that the conduct must be severe, pervasive, and objectively bad, and the federal law is severe or pervasive, not both things, and that's one of the things that makes the definition unworkable, in my opinion, and not the definition in Iowa.
Okay.
Do you understand severe or pervasive? Pervasive versus severe and pervasive, and I don't remember what you said the last thing was, but objectively
something... offensive, severe, pervasive. Those were the descriptors.
Okay. Yes, and that is the there is an objective component to sexual harassment, but it does not require severe conduct and pervasive conduct. It requires severe conduct or pervasive conduct.
Mm-hmm. The advocates of victims' rights have condemned these proposals by the new education secretary. The men's rights groups have said the accused have little recourse. What What about that concern that due process is being ignored too much under the Obama rules? Let's just call them that.
Well, I have a lot of concern about due process, as you may be aware, and I have a pretty good record on protecting due process rights. There's nothing about the Obama regulations, the old regulations, that in any way is intended to or does interfere with the due process rights of students, whether they are the accused or the accuser. And to say that it simply betrays a total lack of understanding of what this process is supposed to be.
Mm-hmm. So to reiterate, perhaps, this does not change, at least in Iowa, the responsibilities of universities and colleges?
It does not.
Does it change... listeners may attend university or college in another state or be parents of kids in other states where that is the case. Does it then reflect a patchwork depending on particular state laws across the country?
Yes, indeed. And there is a patchwork of laws with respect to civil rights generally all over the country. You have state laws and you have federal laws. Some states, for example, don't even have a Civil Rights Act, whereas Iowa has a very strong Civil Rights Act, and so there will be a patchwork. But you know, if my children had not already graduated from college, I would certainly make sure that they went to college in Iowa,
Where you see they have better protection.
They did. They all did go to college in Iowa, incidentally.
Well, Iowa has great colleges and universities, so why not, huh?
Yeah, exactly.
So, who is most happy about these changes?
Probably assailants. That'd be my best guess. You know, that all I can see when I look at these rules is the attempt to make it harder and harder for women to come forward, for women who are sexually assaulted or sexually harassed, to find a remedy, to find someone to talk to find good treatment, and to be given accurate and accurate information about both what has happened to them and what they can do about it.
Mm-hmm. As I mentioned at the outset, you have a long history here in Iowa, also as the former assistant attorney general in the 70s. You headed the Iowa Civil Rights Section. You fought race and sex discrimination. You've been at this for a long, long time.
More than 50 years.
Can you put this change in perspective, in historical context, over the decades? There's been a lot of progress made here, right?
Absolutely, without question. Because I have this very long perspective, I think that I can clearly see a great deal of progress for women and for African Americans and Hispanics and other minority ethnic groups. I can see it. I mean, when I started out in this area, it was very common for women to be denied equal educational opportunity, for women to be denied jobs on the basis of their sex. Women can't be truck drivers. Women can't be lawyers. Women can't be a whole bunch of things that pay pretty good. And that, as best I know, with some very minor exceptions, that's gone now. What we're dealing with now are things that prevent women from getting to their desired career or from getting to their desired educational attainment. And it's quite a bit different than simply being denied those things.
Mm-hmm. And so you see these new policies as, I think you said,
backwards.
A step backwards, a small step backwards?
Big step backwards. The attempt is a big step backwards. But I'm not sure what will happen with these. I can assure you that women are up in arms about them and that we will do everything in our power to prevent them from ever going into effect.
Des Moines attorney Roxanne Conlon, thank you for your views on this. We appreciate your time.
No trouble at all. Thank you for inviting me.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, and if you've just joined us, we're talking about changes that may be on the horizon for how sexual misconduct is handled on college campuses. A number of facets to this. Let's continue this discussion with a University of Iowa student, a senior at the University of Iowa in Iowa City, Jill Oberhart. Hi, Jill.
Hello.
You are also a student Violence Prevention Programs Assistant at the Women's Resource and Action Center. Before I ask you about these policy changes that are being proposed, tell us, what is the Women's Resource and Action Center?
The Women's Resource and Action Center is part of the University of Iowa, but we also serve the Iowa City community. We're social justice oriented, trying to get involved in our community and do some good work. A lot of what we do is violence prevention related. We're also a confidential space for anyone to come in if they need to talk about anything at all. We have therapists. We do several events. We have volunteer opportunities, all sorts of stuff like that.
In other words, very much concerned with violence prevention, sexual harassment, and misconduct on the campus. So let's ask you, what do you think of these possible policy changes on college campuses? And for those who've just joined us, just to reiterate what the Education Secretary is preparing, evidently, according to reports in the New York Times, to bolster the rights of students accused of assault, harassment, or rape, to reduce liability for institutions of higher education, to encourage schools to provide more support for victims. Also, a narrower definition of sexual harassment. There are a number of other things there, but I wondered, what's your reaction?
My reaction is probably not a good one. I think that all of these changes being made to Title IX are going to make it harder for survivors on campus to get the justice that they deserve. No one deserves to be a victim of sexual assault, harassment, any sort of misconduct like that. And historically, universities make it difficult to report and to not have to confront their assaulter or perpetrator, you know. If it's another student, they could have classes with that student. And it's definitely going to make it harder for students to feel safe on campus if they have been exposed to sexual misconduct and violence.
Mm-hmm. You've worked with students who have been assaulted and do bring forth complaints. Mm-hmm. So give us a little bit more about this perspective here. What is preventing justice in this case, as far as you see on a college campus, when a sexual assault occurs?
Well, first of all, there is sort of a societal expectation that people shouldn't report sexual assault or victim blame someone who has been sexually assaulted. You know, there's always those questions, what were you wearing? Were you drinking? Why didn't you do anything? Stuff like that. So there's already sort of a pressure from society to kind of keep quiet. Mm-hmm. And a lot of survivors feel like coming forward is harder than just keeping quiet because of those societal sort of impositions we have. Also, bureaucracy in general takes a long time. So a report could start and not end until someone is long gone from the university, whether they've withdrawn or they've graduated or something like that.
Mm-hmm. What are the steps once a complaint is filed, once someone comes to you with it? Take us quickly through those steps.
So if someone comes to RAC, for instance, and wants to talk about reporting a sexual assault or something like that, we always stress that it's the choice of the survivor how far they want to take it. And we connect them with advocates either at our agency or the Rape Victim Advocacy Program, who we work closely with when it comes to survivors and reporting. And then there are different agencies that we can go to within the university, such as the Office of the Sexual Misconduct Response Coordinator, the Title IX coordinator. We can also make a complaint with them, the university police, depending on where the incident occurred. But it is just a long process. Lots of, you know, interviews, hearings, sort of things that can just re-traumatize someone who has been assaulted.
Mm-hmm. What are still some of the biggest misconceptions you feel there are about sexual harassment?
I think people now just think that, you know, anything they do can be construed as sexual harassment, which is not the case. There are...
Is that because of the Me Too movement and so forth?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of sort of... Because of the Me Too movement, a lot of more people are coming forward. And people aren't used to that. We've kind of just, you know, not talked about things like this before.
Which people are not used to that?
I don't think anyone's used to it. There are a lot of misconceptions in the public coming from just the sheer amount of people who are coming forward now. It's amazing that survivors are feeling like this is their time and their place to come forward. And it is putting pressure on perpetrators. It's like a double-edged sword. People are coming forward, but at the same time, they're not being believed because they're coming forward kind of with everyone else.
Mm. Like, why didn't you say something earlier?
Right. Or why did you wait until now? A lot of it has to do with timing, I think. But, you know, we want people to come forward because we don't want this to happen. We want a world free from sexual assault and harassment.
So, Jill, before we go, tell me, what do you think is the proper role for college administration, colleges to play in preventing sexual assault and misconduct?
I think the main thing colleges can do is start by believing survivors and creating a campus that is safe from those things. The campus can do more by funding more. We're a small entity in the university. And I think that, you know, if we could start education much younger, like way before university, before people ever get to university, that would be great. But yeah, there's a lot of things that we could definitely be doing. But I think it's important that the campus believes the survivors and makes their students feel safe.
Okay, thank you very much. Jill Oberhart, a senior at the University of Iowa, also Student Violence Prevention Programs Assistant at the Women's Resource and Action Center on campus at the University of Iowa. Thanks, Jill.
Thank you.
After a short break, I'll talk with Lee Rood. She's a Reader's Watchdog columnist for the Des Moines Register, also with two representatives of the Polk County Housing Trust Fund. We'll talk about some really distressing living conditions in the Des Moines area and the lack of affordable housing. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, back in a moment.